This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Murray McHenry from McHenry Honan. How are you, Murray?
I'm very well, thank you.
Okay. You were originally a grower for Cape Mentau, and David, your business partner, was the person who started Cape Mentau.
Yes, well, firstly, David's married to my sister, and when he started in the wine industry in Margaret River back in 1971, I stayed very close to what they were doing down there because we had the great interest in wine and not in consuming it, but certainly as a young children, Sandy, my sister and I grew up with our father being a prisoner of war in Italy in the Second World War. He had a love affair with wine when Western Australia, where we come from, wine was not really, it was just a beer state.
Yep.
And so we grew up with wine as young children. And so when David took that decision to go into the wine industry, become a winemaker, you know, we were sort of fascinated and sort of quite involved with him throughout that commencement of his career.
Okay, and you grew, Cape Mentau got to, I think you were telling me earlier, 3,000 tonnes.
Yeah, approximately. I mean, the high 2,000, 3,000 tonnes where Cape Mentau got to, and Cloudy Bay on top of that. And I've forgotten now the figures of Cloudy Bay, but it's substantial as well. It's in that vicinity as well.
Okay, and now you and David have started your own business. You've sold up Cape Mentau to, or David sold Cape Mentau to LVMH, Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton, yeah. But in fact, he did the deal with Joseph Onrio, who had sold the Onrio champagne vineyards to Veuve Clicquot. Clicquot was a company in its own right and was a division, I suppose, of LVMH. So David's involvement was always with Clicquot.
Okay, yep.
It's only been in more recent times for marketing and distribution purposes that LVMH chose to put it all under
Their branding banners under
an LVMH banner.
So your new business with David is you make about 150 tonnes of fruit.
I think across the board we produce around about 600, 700 tonnes of fruit, and we select out of that varieties that we want to make the wines that we do make. And we went out on a basis that we weren't going to commence making wines that had been done at Cape Mentau. We wanted to use some of the experimental varieties that we'd been, in fact, David was chasing over the years, and we had small plots of those. We started playing around with some of those, at the beginning of the century, and we enjoyed some of the Rhone Valley styles.
It's Marsan, I
saw. Marsan, Roussanne, Viogniers, the Grenache, and the Mourvèdre. So we thought that Margaret River was going to give us good expression of that fruit. And particularly in blending, we see the art of winemaking is very much in blending, and consequently, most of our wines are blends. So yes, we have varietals such as Chardonnay and Zinfandel, but in the main, we do a lot of blending, and we feel that we can then get the expression of the fruit and the balance and the harmony in those blends to produce something a little bit different, rather than repeat what we've done before.
What is the big difference when you're growing grapes for Cape Mentau versus growing grapes now? Is there a difference in your approach to the way you grow your grapes?
Yeah, I think as we've got older, we have a different view on life and sustainable methods is what we're looking for. We like to produce food for ourselves from sustainable farming, and we've decided to grow grapes in the same manner so that we have this non-interventional approach to our properties, our farms, and that therefore goes into our viticulture practice and cross into our winemaking methodology that we use. And hopefully, everything makes itself, and all we are is custodians of the land and the animals that are on it and the plants that grow and then the wine. So it's that non-interventional approach to sustainable farming.
Are you organic then?
Well, we follow fully organic principles, and because the farms have had in the past were farms and farmers used phosphates and so on like that, there is no doubt going to be a number of years for those really get out of your soils. So we like to say that we follow organic principles rather than say that we are organic, and we haven't sought to be certified in, as organic growers. And but we that will be an aim of ours in the future.
Given that you're now restricted by following these sustainable viticultural practices in terms of the sprays that you're using, do you find that the grapes you produce are different from maybe the previous grapes you produced for Cape Mentelle, or are you, do you think they're very similar?
Well, you know, I think it's in terms of difference in the taste and the flavours. I don't think we're seeing any differences in there. I think it's more that we believe that in what we're doing in the vineyard that we see animals or bugs in the vineyards that some sprays would remove, and we think that some of the trouble that you get yourself into, it's a rolling ball that just gathers speed, because as you get rid of a problem, you actually add another one.
Yeah.
And so we're enjoying seeing some of the spiders and the different insects that come into our vineyard. And if we can try and use methodologies to get rid of the ones that we don't want, i.e. weevils and things like that. In Margaret River, we have capeweed, which is a broadleaf plant, and which there's nothing wrong with that, except that's where they breed underneath it. So if we put sheep into the vineyard, they eat the broadleaf. And so we have this methodology of preventing the pests that we don't want by a natural method.
Your philosophy of, you know, being fairly natural about your approach to things, does that go through all the way through into the winemaking? Like some people use indigenous, you know, wild yeasts, some people use, you know, inoculated yeast, they buy their yeast in packages. Do you follow the process all the way through in the winemaking process?
In the main, yes. I mean, sometimes you may have a difficult wine in getting it to go through a natural ferment.
Or stuck fermentation.
Stuck fermentation, and it may need some help. So that those sort of things will happen, so we don't rule that out. Our preference is for natural ferments.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. What about like some vintages, you must have problems in the vineyard, whereas maybe in the past you just sprayed. Do you see a big variation from vintage to vintage, or a bigger variation from vintage to vintage?
Mostly in moisture-related issues. So if there's some dampness around and mildews, well, we can treat those with sulphur, but you know, and that's not a chemical. It's a natural additive, and by spraying that and having it a very fine mist spray, we can maintain those. But sometimes a bit of botrytis will come in certain varieties, such as Zinfandel, and all of a sudden the sugar levels race away from us, you know, literally overnight, and we may not have the ripeness in the fruit that we're looking for. You see it, and you can almost see them going to raisin, and you say they've got to be ripe, but they're actually not ripe, and that becomes a problem, and then we have to deal with the alcohol problem of that wine. But look, if we see that happen, we try and control it. If it runs out of control, well, then we just won't produce the wine. And that's a loss in monetary terms, but certainly it keeps us up there in our clientele base, know that if we don't produce a wine, then there was good reason why we didn't do it. It wasn't right for the market.
I mean, we talked upstairs about the variation from vintage to vintage.
If I can say that, yes, you get variation from vintage to vintage, but I think what I was trying to get across there was that some of the issues will give you variations in vintage, but that's something that we enjoy, the variations from vintage to vintage.
Yep.
Because they do give you different aspects of each wine from year to year, and I think that's the part of the enjoyment of wine.
How do restaurants deal with that? Because your wines are destined for the restaurant trade, and restaurants quite often I've always thought restaurants quite often like consistency from one year to the next, so that, you know, it's less work for them almost.
Yeah, well, unfortunately with us, they're going to have to see the variation from vintage to vintage, and that's something they need to deal with. And it may be that they don't like a particular vintage and therefore won't buy the wine. They'll drop us off the list. We might come back again.
Yeah,
and look, we're, there's no apology there. We clearly see that the wines are going to be expressive of their variety, expressive of their soil type, and certainly expressive of the climatic conditions of that particular year, which every year is slightly different, and it creates its own challenges as winemakers, but it does give you that beautiful flavour profiles that from vintage to vintage, and there is a common thread, obviously, from the variety and the soil type, but there is that subtle change from the vintage to vintage in the climatic conditions.
Do you think that your current production methods emphasise that, maybe compared to the older days when you're at Cape Mentelle?
Well, more so with white wines. If at Cape Mentelle, Cape Mentelle's biggest selling product is Semillon Sauvignon Blanc, and at Cloudy Bay it was Sauvignon Blanc, and it's almost like every year they taste the same. I mean, they're always beautiful and fragrant when they're first released. They get a bit more complex as they go through the cycle of that 12 months. They're wines that are produced produced and released almost in the year that they were of that vintage. So. And they're sold by the end of the year, so the next one comes out.
Yep.
Whereas our wines now are wines that we would release a little bit later, and they change dramatically in the bottle as time goes on, and then they give you a different experience. So yeah, there is a big difference in that.
Okay, as a winery that produces wines for restaurant wines, are you making your wines differently for the restaurant trade, or do you think they go down as well with food or as without food?
Well, certainly we would say our wines are made to accompany food, and that they're sort of a more textured style, and therefore food is very much part of the experience that you need to balance out with. We do have a Semillon Sauvignon Blanc, and that's more an easy drinking style, with food, without food, doesn't matter. But when you start getting into your Marzans on the whites and your Shiraz Grenaches and Tempranillos and things like that in the reds, there we see them very much as food wines.
What do you think are the main attributes for a wine that is good for food as opposed to a wine for standing up quaffing?
Well, it's a difficult question, that one. I think the attributes of the wines that are matured in oak and things like that tend to be the slightly more complex and textured style, and they're the ones that really are the food wines. The wines that are made in a more straight up and down method in stainless steel or in other cases where some winemakers will produce a more even wine by using a different treatment of oak. Then those wines just suit the standard quaffing.
Okay, excellent. I think we'll wrap it up there.
No, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much, Murray.